It's time for the Carol Cox Show on K108, heard every Sunday from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. If you have questions for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080.
Such demand from sunrise down to sunset, do the best that I can. 'Cause I know that I can never choose just one. 'Cause the feeling in my life, yeah, my husband and my son, yeah, yes. One is tall and handsome, one is full of life. The big one steals my covers in the middle of the night. Each one swears they need me, and I believe they're right. 'Cause the young ones call me mommy, and the other calls me wife. And I never know that I could love her too much. 'Cause the three men in my, they're my husband and my sons. Hush, hush, hush. Someday they're gonna leave me, gonna strike out on their own. Off to raise a family, little babies of their own. I'll be here with daddy, just as happy as you please, to watch the branches growing on a family's reach. And I know that I can never love just one. Never knew that
okay, good morning. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show, and many of you will say, what does that song have to do with today's show? Well, actually, not much at all. It's just a beautiful song and a nice windy day, and I'm sure there's many of you out there nursing the flu and the colds like myself, and I just thought, hey, let's not try to coax them into anything today. Just play something nice. That was Anita Baker. But anyway, I'm back on track, and the usual myself, and I'm trying to coax Polka to stay in and bribe him to stay in and talk for a little bit, and on a subject that, as you know, there is a protest scheduled to plan today down at Kawahau Church, and it's regarding the Kupuna Iwi, and many people have called and shared and asked me to let everyone know that is interested or have opinions or objections or whatever to join in or come down today. There will be a gathering at the palace at 8:30, and then they'll move over to the church at Kawahau. So, and you know, you've seen some news reports about it, and there are questions about the handling and just the outright issuance of the permit for disinterment. And anyway, I guess what I would be interested in covering and sharing with you, the listener, some of the things that, like myself, you know, it's you hear, there they go again, complaining. But the reality is, intelligent people don't just complain because they got nothing better to do, especially in today's economy and things, way things are going. So there's a demand on their time anyway. So when people come together in such a fashion, I think that lends credence or credibility to their argument, or suggests that one should listen, or they're being treated unfairly. So, however, whatever the equation is, that's what I'm going to be talking about. And Poker, I'm just going to lasso you in here, and loosely, I know you have to go, but if you could share some of your insight on there, because I first want to apologize to anybody out there that might take offense to me talking about this issue, but it's okay, and I don't mean any harm. I'm just trying to bring some light to a subject that has been treated lightly, and as I've seen the media, so I do apologize. So have at it and share your many of things.
First of all, thanks for giving me a voice on this particular subject, and I have to confess that I'm not what we say ma'a to all of the different sides to this issue. In fact, in my earlier program, someone did call in and explain some of it, but still I feel a bit uncertain, so I have more questions about exactly what is going on rather than at this point making an opinion. Although I have a lot of opinions about many things.
That's why we march in every morning.
So I think the first question is the idea of sacredness of burial places. And to what extent is a land sacred because someone has died and has been buried on that land? Does it mean that one can, what we say, kapu, a particular area, because I left my bones there? Some people will say, well, I've worked the land, so my sweat and tears and blood is part of the land, and you cannot do this or that to the land. There's a, I think, it comes from English history, and they talk about the concept of the rule against perpetuities. That means that you cannot stretch your hand out of the grave beyond 20 years after the last life in being. So in order to try to continue to control land after you have passed on, they're going to cut your arm off. They're going to say, 20 years is the most you get. So when you try to create trust or wills and all that stuff and give land and say it shall be retained in my family into perpetuity, they cut that off and they say, no, it's against the rules, against perpetuity. So in the same idea, to what extent should the dead or the families who survive from the dead be able to control the use of land? So if I put someone's bones in the land, has I reserved it for his bones forever? And I don't think that is the law. I think some people working out of a sense of passion or feeling for memorializing someone who has passed, they would like to see it preserved. But I don't think that is found in the culture or in the law. Now, the question then becomes, well, whose culture are you talking about? And if you move into Hawaii at the present time, you have a very interesting case of a church, Kawaihau Church, a very old Hawaiian church. But what does it mean? Is it first Christian or is it first Hawaiian from the Hawaiian cultural side? And the church, from what I've heard and read, is saying, first of all, we're Christians. And the bones that have been buried here are Christian bones. Or at least that's what we understand. The furthest that we can go in terms of who exactly has been buried here. These are Christians. So when you try to apply Hawaiian cultural concept to Christian bones, the question then becomes, what is the appropriate application? And yet, these are Hawaiian priests who say we are Christians. So some may argue, well, they're just acting out of their own colonization. But if you respect the right of self-determination, each person, whether or not, whatever his race may be, he has a right to declare what his religion is, what his belief systems are. On the other hand, people are saying, yeah, but if I'm a descendant of that person whose bones are in there, shouldn't I have a say in the care of those bones? And I think to a certain extent that is correct, and this is what the state is essentially saying, the Department of Health, the Department of Land and Natural Resources.
Historical preservation.
Yeah, and they are saying that in this process, in the application that the church has submitted for the disinterment permit, they are essentially saying as a condition for disinterment, you cannot just create your own church members or your own committee within the church, or even those people who have been so far identified as being descendants of these interred bones. But you need to broaden the scope of discussion into the general public. And this is the condition under which we are requiring that you proceed for the disinterment and take those considerations. So I think from that point of view, it is a methodical, respectful approach. On the other hand, people are saying, and one of the callers had said, hey, they're pulling out, what, 300 bodies so far, and they don't know where to place the bodies. So we don't want them placed at the Bishop Museum or put into drawers in somebody's basement. And, and, of course, I understand and I appreciate that. I don't know, though, if that is in fact true. That is, in fact, the plan that the church has for the process of disinterring. The argument that just leave the bones alone, leave it in there, and don't disturb the bones, which means you cannot proceed with your development. You cannot dig and put your, what do you call it, these piles to create a foundation for the building. So what do? You make short foundations for tall buildings. So you have those issues, and I don't know if that statement of not removing bones once they inhabit a land is either culturally correct in the Hawaiian tradition or any other tradition. So I think those are at least some of the issues or points of discussion that I would need to get more clarity on, and I haven't seen that clarity there.
The in regards to the 300, they're reporting, they being the archaeologists, DLNR is requiring them to do a weekly report. And in that, there are some concerns in how the reports are. They are finding extra bones.
More than they thought initially.
Well, beneath, see, there's a casket, the Christian burial. There's a casket containing the EV. And then in turn, when they remove that, they're finding fragments and other parts, human remains, that precedes those burials. So the problem is it's more than 300 as reported. It's actually like whatever the number is contained in there, and they're not. I've spoken to SHPDI, the Historical Preservation Department, and all that is occurring right now is pulling out the actual caskets or remnants of the caskets with the EV and numbering them, but not assigning a name at this time. So as you can see later on, what's going to happen is that descendants or whomever might be interested can't go in, in my opinion and observation, that you can make a valid argument or have a say, because you won't know if, for example, burial 222 belongs to you or some other family. So it's, while I'm not debating what's right or wrong, it's the process and due diligence and the due process for a party, and I don't know if this is plausible, but let's say I have a family member there in turn, and I know this is coming, so I would like to, being that he's being disinterred, I would like to take and remove him and place him amongst the rest of the family at another location. But can I do that at this time?
If you don't know it.
So you're robbing, this process is robbing people of the due process. But
I think the process also calls for an opportunity of anyone who believes that they may be descendants of these bones to file their names with the church. And they are mandated to give them a voice and a consideration in this process. So the question is, does the church really know who the names are of these early burials? And at times, you know, it's not an assumption we can make that in modern day we may believe that we know all the locations. Right. Even if you go to Kona, for example, I have some ancestors who are buried there in the church. But when we ask, where are the grave sites? Oh, we had a parking lot, we had to move them, and they're someplace else, but they're not sure. Record keeping has not been the most accurate for all these people. And it's not only Hawaiians. You know, in the Japanese churches, they have difficulty with that. I can understand if you know who they are, it should be published.
Yeah. Well, the representation in this instance is, in fact, that's why I double-check with the poor IU. And she assured me they know who they are. And that. But at this time, SHPTI is not requiring them to take the name and marry the name at this time. And so the project may end up, I'm just saying, 500 people. Now you got to wait until they marry up each number. And some of the other concerns that have been expressed to me is that those fragments that were found outside of the
burial.
Right. Okay. Some of that, there's questions as to the disposition of that soil or that material, the media that contain these fragments, and they don't believe that they were treated properly. And I've actually, this week, I've been able to track down a location where some of the dirt went and was trucked off by the truckload. So I think we'll get access to that. So as I say, I'm careful to say what I believe and whatever, but based on the manner in which this is being treated, I think, and the way I see it, there's some issues here of just simply communication and either a heavy-handedness or cloaking with, you know, we use our relationships to. But the state health department just merely issued a permit. They didn't really go into details, while the state historic preservation did. But here's some of the things that a lot of the people are alarmed by. Here's one of the weekly reports. On 12/13, burials 131 and 147 were recovered. Isolated human skeletal remains, mostly, parentheses, mostly small bones or bone fragments recovered from disturbed contexts included. Generally, reports are not written this way. What is a disturbed context? So,
I would assume that they were undisturbed when they were covered, and when they're uncovered, it becomes a disturbed context. So,
But as IU explained it, you have the casket sitting down on this substrate, and that material contains Evie.
Not the casket, not below
the outside of the. This is a separate. Okay. So they place the casket on top of this soil containing the EV. So what happens then is that they're saying in a disturbed context. She explained that in, let me make sure I get this right, in 1940, the reason that some of this, you find these fragments, and there were native burials there in that area. what happened was that there was some disinterment at that time in the 40s, and there were about 114 burials removed or something, but they used morticians to remove, and they weren't careful as to, you know, treat it with the greatest care, that and so a lot of things were broken and fragmented. Mm-hmm. So the history of it, and what I'm gathering from this, the people, and there's attempts within the House to speak, and then I understand there's people that were on the board that are speaking out publicly about it, that was on the church board. Mm-hmm. So a lot of things, and there's a bigger issue, as I shared with you off air, was that OHA had given $1 million to build this multi-purpose center. And now there's issues where OHA had actually written a letter demanding some clarity. And I'm told that there was supposed to be a press conference last week. Mm-hmm. And it didn't develop, but they sent the letters out demanding some accountability for this money and why it was spent in a certain way or was not spent. All of those issues were raised.
I think because you mentioned at least three, if not more than three, specific mm-hmm. areas of discussion. And they really need to be parceled out one at a time. Otherwise, it just becomes a response based on emotion and dislike mm-hmm. for the subject matter, rather than mm-hmm. trying to go through layer after layer and try to resolve each layer at a time.
Mm-hmm.
The first question, the underlying question, is what I tried to raise at the beginning. Is land sacred and not to be touched because there are bones in it? If you say no, then end of discussion. Just leave everything alone. Mm-hmm. If you say, well, yes, but under certain conditions, then the discussion can proceed. And I think the general assumption is yes, but under certain conditions.
Mm-hmm.
One, care. Second, accuracy. Third, include all of the appropriate voices that should be heard. And do it with an appropriateness that is culturally and religiously correct.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so those are some of the conditions that I think in which they should be reviewed.
Uh-huh.
So the first question is, well, what about those whose bodies are in caskets, and we assume at least there's a record?
Uh-huh.
The thing that you have mentioned is, well, you're not giving names, and what you need to do is give names rather than merely numbers so that the descendants can be identified, and I agree with that. The question then becomes, should you stop the disinterment and the placement of these caskets at this time until you have given names and numbers to the casket? Or should the removal take place now and then as quickly as possible move to the identification of the person
uh-huh.
and if possible to who the descendants are so that they can claim at least a lineal
uh-huh.
connection with those things. So I am in agreement with that, and they should move as quickly as possible.
Right.
I cannot make the assumption that they have not attempted to.
Oh, no. For this brief period that we've discussed it, the paperwork that I have here, there's lawsuits that have been filed. So, as you say, stripping away layer by layer.
Yeah.
I'm Johnny-come-lately in this, and my concern was just to give an open opportunity, a forum. Other than that, I'm careful to, again, say I don't want to express my opinions here, but this is, at this stage of the game, it's almost a little difficult to turn around and say what they should have done when I look at the documentation and people are complaining. I'm so remotely removed and don't believe I have a right to be involved.
So you call me?
No, well, of course, because you... No, I was going to... We're going to talk about it, but the this is an example where government involved, they're making one declaration. Well, they're not native burials, but they're Christian burials, so we really don't have a say. But then in the same statement, they're saying there are native burials there mm-hmm. that the fragments are found in a disturbed context. So instead of saying there are fragments that are remaining here as a result of earlier
Okay, so that gives us the second layer that we need to peel off.
Well, they're peeling it away.
Okay, let's take a look at that, that peeling of the second layer. Disturbed contents or whatever the
context,
term. Context. Context that had been used. Once they dug, it became a disturbed context.
Right.
Once you removed whatever was on top of that human remains, it became a disturbed context. Mm-hmm. Now, you have two choices. Cover it back over, but you've already disturbed it. Or what are you going to do now that you have disturbed it? Yeah. So the question then becomes, for me at least, do I leave the bones in place with it uncovered, with the dogs, the cats, and the rain, and all this material being exposed? Or is it our responsibility to remove it, separate it, identify it, and begin to address how we're going to treat it after it has been removed? It seems to me that a lot of people are saying, don't touch it, leave it alone. And I don't know if I would go along with that.
I'll leave that one to you.
I would rather have it removed, placed in a covered area, and not to give the general public access to viewing it. And even if a person claims that that's my ancestor there, not to give that person access until there have been some review of how we're going to proceed methodically in terms of people claiming to have ancestry there. Because the question then becomes, how do you know that those are the bones? How do you know that this was a site? Do you have family records or any other records to determine that? And I would not accept a person to simply come in and say, well, I think as my ancestors, that's not enough. Because if it's not, and if somebody else's ancestors, then they're going to get more hoo-hoo with you for having everybody looking at the bones.
Well, you know, and that's in theory, that's okay. But one of the things is that that is not being tossed out by the church. See, the church is accepting the responsibility, and the church has agreed per conditions set by
Department of Health.
So to insert other theories would be, you know, once you say, if you allow me to do this, I'll commit to doing this to protect that. Well, if you default on that, then you are inviting questions, and then to burden the people or any party who comes along and say, I'd like to take responsibility or participate. And what are you going to say no to them? What are you going to use to say no when, in fact, you've agreed to a certain protocol and you deviate from that? So you've invited.
I don't think there was a deviation yet, though.
I haven't
seen that deviation.
Yeah, there's, in fact, like Dana Hall, Naomi Hall, she filed a lawsuit, and I think she's refiling it there on a technicality or something. But these are, and there have been others who've gone there.
Yeah, but what is the context, though, the content of her complaint?
Oh, it's here. It's, my goodness. Gee whiz, it's pretty thick, and I didn't want to, I was trying to get her to come on, but just to say that, that's the, as you say, the hoo-hoo, the things that are going on out there. And I guess what I'm, my interest is to say to OHA and say to these state agencies, because if it turns into individuals have to challenge the church and it becomes a fight, it's almost something that they stood by and watched when they should have said, look, this is, we have the interests of all people here, and especially OHA and especially Shipti. So we want cool, calm approach to this. You agree to do it this way, then we'll do it that way. Not that it was perfect, but to allow them to excavate and then write the reports. And that term, in a disturbed context, just spell it out and say that bone fragments are remaining here found because of earlier disturbance, earlier removal. You know, then you're just speaking in the open. But for me, I've never in my entire life read a document where it says in a disturbed context. Now I got to go get an English professor to apply. Yeah. What is the context when, in fact, what it's describing, circumspect, is to simply say there are bones that are here that were disturbed and broken up, busted up, in an earlier dig. And they're wanting to shield, prevent the public from knowing that there were probably mishaps in earlier, the 1940s, and they don't want to just spell it out. If they're open about that, the process would probably be less suspicious.
That's a term being used by the Department of Health or by the church?
No. The actual report is being made as a requirement by Cultural Surveys of Hawaii.
Okay.
It's a professional archaeologist. So it's like the environmental report said when a company wants to do something, they give you all these highfalutin numbers and equations, and you and I sit there and go, what is X time Y? We don't know. And so just that in itself is, some are calling into question as to why isn't it spelled out. And I'm just conveying what has been shared with me, because one way or the other, my real interest is, I was interested in the fact that OHA gave $1 million to this church, and immediately, not changing tracks and subject, but why would a state agency be giving a church money? And then caught in the middle of the people that were supposed to benefit from that, is crying foul. So saying, look, these are things we're now, you've invited the elephant into the theater, and you want us to sit here and deal with it. It's that kind of thing. So OHA has expressed, and I was trying to pull up the letter.
Mm. And who from OHA wrote that?
Kolat Machado.
As a chairperson of the board. Mm-hmm. Okay, so...
So there's been some...
expressed some concerns.
Yeah, and I will post that, and I will get you a copy of it. But again, I don't want to be disrespectful and go, because it's not... In my opinion, my right to sit here and hash out, and intervene. But it's those other things on the periphery when it comes to government agency. But I'll leave the rest and respect what you have to offer. And then others said they would be calling in when they get out there. But the idea is, I personally haven't seen that much in the media, and I thought, this is a great start.
I think this discussion is important because it sets the parameters so that when people call in, rather than just responding to an emotional claim or a cry out, we have at least examined the different areas and tried to at least create some framework for taking a look at it. The next question is, and you've made reference to it, is this a question or is this a topic that is the kuleana of the native Hawaiians? Or when you're dealing with these subjects, is it the kuleana of governments, or is it the kuleana, or is it appropriately discussed even among or by the Chinese or the Japanese? Because we all deal with the same issue of touching human remains and how do you treat respectfully. So to a certain extent, I understand the carefulness and the consideration. To another extent, it's such a important human affair that I think it would be helpful to hear the voices of many people. And it's not only because it's Kawaihao Church or it's because what we anticipate to be Native Hawaiian burials, but it affects many of our burial lots all over the place, in people's yards and in old Chinese burial places in Hawaii.
Well, I just always remind myself that when it comes to Native people, and this, I'm not going to project this on Kawaihao Church or anyone else, but when it comes to Native people and people of color and their burials and their sites, and I'm going to spell it out, if you don't like it, shut your radio off and never listen again. But what happens is that for African Americans, their graves are dug up and there is no accounting. We need to put a gas station here or sewage treatment plant, whatever. But if I were to walk down right now and went to the Jewish synagogue or went to a cemetery or the Mormons or whatever and wrote on there, Poca is my hero, I would be committed to prison for a felon of desecration.
Okay.
Now, so, but no, and no one goes to ask and lay it out. So the process is, what really triggered my interest in this, I heard about the Kauai Howl Church, and I heard about four people go, there the Hawaiians go again. They're trying to stop development and using the bones as an excuse. And I thought to myself, where have I heard that before? Here's a person who is driving by in his Lexus, and he see it, and that's all he can project on them, and robbing them of the opportunity to credit the people that are standing out there in this, in, engaged in this discussion, that they're intelligent, kind, caring people. Yeah. But, oh, there they go again, Hawaiians.
it's my response to that.
Well, you know, and here's my response. Put it on air and see if I can help clear something up, you know, because it's insulting. And to be very honest with you and frank with you, that's why I really took an interest, because, you know, like in the environmental activities, people say, well, there they go again. They're challenging the environmental impact statement. But if that's the law of the land that keeps civility, then why not adhere to and observe it and be guided by it, you know?
It's the same thing when Frank Fossey said, you know, this guy Hayden Burgess, who had subpoenaed him to come down to the Waianae Courthouse when they arrested a lot of the people who were homeless, and I was defending them.
So
I subpoenaed the mayor, and he didn't appreciate it. And he had some very unkind remarks about me. And I said, I'm not going to dignify such idiotic statement, and just left it at that. I don't think we should dignify this flippant remarks about, well, here they go again, because it's not based on reason. And they're not willing to subject their remarks to examination of rationality and all of those principles that they themselves like to uphold. So for that kind of stuff, here they go again, they're against progress, they're against development and all that stuff. If they come out with something specific, that my concept of progress is this, this, and that, we need growth, then at least you have something, some e-o to address. Well, if you like growth, then cancer is growth. You must like cancer, and you must be invested in the pharmaceuticals, because that's the only people
who like. Well, one of those that really heightened my interest and caused me to really go at it was a city official. You know, and I'm thinking, enough, because you're the guy who sits and makes decisions. And so, while not dignifying it, one must, you know, you must, if you see a little flame in your kitchen, you address it. You know, you don't walk away and say, well, it'll, you know, it'll take care, burn itself out. No, you just, you think, well, okay, we'll go and, you're right, you know, don't dignify a lot of things. I mean, if name calling, we were told, if someone call your name, don't turn and engage in, and because you're giving dignity or, you know, to that statement or to that person's thoughts.
I once had sort of like a city official, a judge in a case that I was representing. And I filed a motion to dismiss on the grounds of lack of jurisdiction over our citizens, because this was Hawaiian land stolen by the government. This was in Makua. I represented some people from being evicted from Makua after Hurricane Eva struck Hawaii and the Waianae area about 28 years ago. After going through the determination of whether or not the land title really is with the state of Hawaii, because it was given to them from the federal government, my question to their expert witness was, well, where did the feds get it from? Oh, the feds got it from the Republic of Hawaii. Then my question was, well, where did the Republic of Hawaii get it from? Oh, we don't go behind that question. We don't ask that question. And I said, why not? For any other title search, you always go back to the mihele. Now, why is it that this you stop at the Republic of Hawaii? Oh, that's our policy. I said, yeah, that doesn't answer the question. You know, where did it actually come from? And then I said, you know very well where it came from. You folks participated in a theft of it. Now, after that, the judge, I think his name was Harada, decides against me, saying, no, we have jurisdiction over these people. Then he calls a recess. He comes off the bench, and he approaches me. Everyone else is out of the courtroom except the advertiser reporter. So at first he turns to the reporter, and he says, this is off the record. Then he turns to me, And he says, why do you waste the time of the court? Because even if I found in your favor, the issue would be appealed by the other side and they'd overthrow my decision. So why waste my time? Now, the same case, public official, mm-hmm. having made this kind of stupid statements. So my response could have been, well, I'm sorry, Judge, yes, you're right, and all that stuff. Instead, what I said, and I believe you got to call it to their attention immediately, I said, look, Judge, once you put on that cloak, you assume the position of judge. You're supposed to decide what the law is, what the facts are, and the rest. Mm-hmm. If you are gutless enough not to make that decision, don't come crying on my shoulders because I'm giving you a bad time.
And you walked out there with no handcuffs?
Yes, I did. But, of course, they found my clients all guilty.
Okay.
But the thing is, we cannot allow that kind of failure of being dignified in your position, government official or non-government official, mm-hmm. and call them right as it is.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well.
So anyway, we have different responses. So.
Oh, yeah.
I appreciate.
I think the situation, too, the circumstances and the occasion dictates the response. I mean, if you got a guy with no teeth and from Mississippi living in a trailer house and saying, well, I just don't like nobody that don't look like mine,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're mm-hmm. the fool of the century if you turn to talk to him. You know, you keep moving because your day will be blemished.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I don't know if you have any callers yet, but
524-1080. You can ask Poker all the questions you
know. Don't ask me. But now that you've raised the subject of Mississippi, and Mississippi and Alabama is almost the same, twin brothers, some could say.
And one body, two heads.
One body, two heads. The question then came up of Mitt Romney.
Yeah? Who's
Romney?
He?
Yeah. Yeah, they're using a false name. That's not his birth name, right? Mormon running for president.
Mm-hmm.
Barack Obama, black man,
mm-hmm.
running for president, or will be running for president.
Well, if I might be... Now, remember, he's mixed. He's half breed, you know. Now, you make sure you keep that. We can't sit here and talk like this now. We have to make sure. Obama, Barack Obama... Hussein Barack Obama is mixed breed. Now, don't forget that now, boy. You let's talk now. Now, if you want to talk, let's talk about Mitt who?
Okay. So what it places a lot of people in the South in is between not a matter of what your policy is with regards to the Iraq, Syria, or health insurance, but will they sin by voting for a non-Christian, although it's the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, who's a Mormon? Because there's a strong belief among certain Protestants that the Mormons are not Christians,
mm-hmm.
or a person who claims to be Christian, but of not the right color. And so which prejudice runs deeper so that you will go for the lesser prejudice if they are indeed the two mm-hmm. candidates that run for office? And a lot of people are saying, well, they would probably go for the non-Christian rather mm-hmm. than the non-white.
Mm-hmm.
A very interesting issue that...
And this was... they're observing Mississippi and Alabama.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say that would be like sitting down studying a rock and trying to determine how fast was Jesse Owens, you know. To see how fast a rock, you're not, in the South, they're still stuck on trying to define if human beings are human beings, you know, if mm-hmm, they don't look mm-hmm. like themselves. So I don't give credit to much that comes out of there. Mm-hmm. Having mm-hmm. lived there, mm-hmm. brought up there, mm-hmm. and the injuries that they inflict on just common people, children and all, they have no shame. So I don't even, you know, if Mitt wins that the state, mm-hmm. then I think that's great, and we ought to put just spread light. The brightest color there is to remind ourselves, you know. This is a land of little thinking and all emotions and very religious.
Yeah, yeah, very religious. And yet the prejudice also ran, and still runs deep for many of them.
And then, you know, probably Barack Obama would probably have gone to Mitt's church as a Mormon, but he wasn't allowed because he was a black man. So, you know, you cheat the man out of the right to choose his religion. And now you tell him he's, you know, well, he's Muslim. Muslim. Well, you know, he's not a Christian. Well, wait, you know, the Mormons wouldn't let him in. So, it's, you know, I'm being silly, but again.
But now they do, I understand. Now they would let blacks in, but not to hold certain positions in the church.
Yeah. But don't tell them that because, you know, it's we're working on it, they say. So I stay away from it, and I have friends that are Mormon, and I always remind them it's a belief system, period.
Mm-hmm.
If you can pull him out of your pocket and show him to me and we can sit there and converse where I can see him, you got a winner. Mm-hmm. But until then, it's a belief system, and every religion has some similarities and some things that are just simply just don't gel. And
okay, now that you have created a firestorm over two issues,
brimstone and fire,
is this where I make my departure and let you handle the
calls? Yeah. Well, that was all. Attribute those comments to CarolCox.com, Carol Cox Show, not KWAI or Polka Illinois. But thank you, Polka.
It's been enjoyable, my friend.
Yeah, and hopefully people will call in. And as I say, I don't want to sit here and project anything wrong, but it's free air, free talk. And if you'd like to call in, 524-1080, and you just can't curse on air, but you can curse me if you want to and tell me how wrong I am. But you know, it's okay. But we need some thinking. Everyone I talk to now, it subsequently the conversation is built around conspiracy. It's amazing that the average American is either fearful of his government or there's a conspiracy of something going on. We're hurting. You know, we won't have time to even apply what we're learning in school or in church or on the work site. Because, I mean, I'm amazed at when people engage in conversation. And a couple of things. It's either the Federal Reserve Bank. They want you to vote for Ron Paul, or you think Obama's going to win because there's a conspiracy and he's a part of the Bilderbergs, and then Romney is part of this, the dragons and whatever. And it's like, my God, we're going back into the dark ages. Or, you know, what are we going to start doing? Tarring and feathering people to see if they really part chicken or I don't know.
No.
So it's crazy.
Well, and I think the kind of programs that you run where people are able to talk about it and get it above and start looking at some of the factual stuff, because once you toss in the word conspiracy, you build something that is so large that people, what you do is you take away the ability of people to examine and reason out and see if it's true or not. And so these kind of the conversations is so important in a democratic society where you can hear the voices of the people themselves rather than just reading what the officials have to say.
And I know how sensitive you are and caring. I was and don't like to discuss other radio shows, but this was a news item. I was absolutely excited to see Rush Limbaugh get his just desserts. If there's anybody that I would, and I don't like to clap when a man is down, but that was deserving. And when you behave that way toward women in that fashion, sit there and openly say those things. There are some of the local stations here went in to defend him that plays him on their station. And, oh, he's not, you know, at some point you have to call a spade a spade. Period. Just you can't dabble and dibble and then turn around and go, oh, we care about everybody, and the media doesn't do this. When one of your own insult women in that fashion, and practically many, and then they say, oh, it's the left. But one of the funny things, as a call, one of the funny things that happened is immediately after that, they start attacking, they on the right start attacking the lady on CNN. Can't think of her name right now, but, you know, did you see what she said? Trying to shift the blame when in fact Rush Limbaugh insulted women, period. And in doing so, he assaulted many people, men, women, and children. Because, you know. Good morning. You have a call, comment, a question for Polka?
Got a question.
Okay.
Whatever happened to the bones that when they dug for the project for Walmart? I didn't hear anything what they did with those bones.
Well, I'm told it's the same person that did that are doing these, and the same person that is, company is doing that is doing most of the rail or a great bit of the rail. So
the Walmart one, I think the bones are still left in drawers under
Isn't
the.
Isn't it left in the garage or something in Walmart?
Yeah, I don't know if it's. Yeah. I think so. And they still don't know what to do with those bones.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So what don't firehouses do the same?
No, I don't think my church wants to do the same.
You know, put it in the church somewhere.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, or reinter it somewhere.
And then they can have a private burial for those people.
Yeah.
I mean, something's got to be done. I mean, you know, it's progress. Okay, the church wants to expand for the multi-purpose building for the church.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the church cannot just leave the bones in a drawer or just leave it with Bishop Museum. It has to find a solution, a more final disposal of the bones that is respectful, etc. But not to handle it the way Walmart handled it, which is one of the reasons why people are protesting. Look, Walmart already screwed it up. How are you folks going to handle it? And I think the church needs to respond by answering those questions.
Okay, thanks.
Hey, thank you. And Polka, thank you.
Thank you.
Any other callers want to call in the next hour, be happy to receive you. And again, hopefully it just afford an opportunity. We're not going to solve the problems, but at least get to hear some of the things that we don't hear or know about. So thanks again, and I appreciate you allowing me to just grab you.
It was a pleasure. Take care.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
tuned for the second half of the Carol Cox Show right after the news on KWAI Honolulu, K101.
No! cross this chain. None of us are free.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show on K108, heard every Sunday from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. If you have questions for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080.
Okay, welcome back to the Carol Cox Show, and thank you for joining me. The number here, 524-1080, 524-1080, if you'd like to call, have comments, or share your views, or what have you. And I really appreciate Polka. It's almost kind of bad on my part to just harangue someone in and unaware that they're going to be invited, but that's how speaks to the brilliancy of Polka, so. And his ability, and he's speaking from the heart and the mind and soul, I will describe it. But carrying on the conversation of the Evi Kupuna there at Kauai Hau Church, I spoke earlier in that there was a letter written by Oha, and I want to share this letter with you and some of you, and there's a couple of them, but I'll try and be brief, and I apologize for the nasal. But this was written by State of Hawaii Office of Hawaiian Affairs, Colette Machado, at chairperson. And it was written February 23rd, 2012, to Mr. Frank Pestana, the chair of the Kauai Hau Church. Aloha, Mr. Pestana. We have conducted a review of contract compliance by the church, and we're disappointed to learn that our goal for the grant, the, quote, construction of a multi-purpose facility, end quote, has foundered, and that the books and records of account, including many backup documents, are missing. Our accounting firm had to piece the information together as best they could, given the available information. Besides failing to complete the building and maintain the records, there were reporting errors, non-secular uses of funds, and the failure to file a timely final report. The church's revised accounting for the funds now shows that they were expended on pre-construction activities, including archaeological surveys, cultural and environmental assessments, as well as some demolition activities as required by the contract. On balance, while we take serious issues with the way this grant was handled, we do not believe it would be productive or prudent to proceed with costly litigations in as much as that would be counterproductive to completing the project. As should be evident, the goal of producing a multi-purpose facility remains a worthy one, Colette Machado. Now, again, on the 23rd of February, basically, she writes the same gentleman again. After months of observing Kauai Hau Church handling of the Evi controversy, I write on behalf of the trustees to express our despair and disappointment with the church's decision to proceed with disinterment under the legal justification of the Department of Health ruling, despite violating centuries-old Hawaiian cultural burial protocols and traditions. We are particularly disappointed that church leaders chose at times to pit Christian teachings against Hawaiian burial law with respects to process and protocols guiding disinterment and reburial. While the church has its obligations and right to practice its religious doctrine, the moral obligation of culture, custom, and tradition would not appear to either spiritually or theologically undermine Christian belief or teachings. They merely set a higher bar for the treatment of ancestral remains. Anyway, it's a long letter, and this again was signed by Miss Colette Machado, the chairperson of OHA. And she's ended in between there, on behalf of all Native Hawaiians, I personally implore the church to do what is pono and heal the wounds. In spite of our disappointment, we still stand by and ready to assist in any way that we can to ho'oponopono the situation. So anyway, there's clearly from a person, I'll describe myself as a drive-by participant in this who purposely act in that role because I don't know all of the cultural and I don't want to be disrespectful, but I think it's okay to try and reach out and bring, and that was my purpose of looking for these documents. And as usual, I got to tell you, if something such as this is already laid out, I've met great resistance from the state office of the Department of Health Vital Records. Alvin Onaka and his staff, I would rather walk through hell with a gasoline suit on than to go back into his office. You don't believe, and you can't believe, that that is a state office. I don't know what your experience has been, but you can't. You call them, you talk, you dial the number, and the office, and it tells you, and this is normal working hours, normal weekday, and the recorded message is, we're sorry, you must call at normal working hours, and our hours are from this time to this time, and then click, and you can't even leave a message. This is the quality of people that they hire, and this is the process or the treatment that this agency hands out or delves out to the public. So I hope you better luck than when you go there, but it's really bad. But I was, again, as I had mentioned, there were a few people who were going to call in, but they have not made it to the area. They're still at the palace, I'm told, gathering there. And so what is happening is I had another little subject I want to share with you. It's completely different from this, and if they call in, we'll pick it up again. I don't know about you, but I had the experience of a lifetime just yesterday. See, I have my trusted little iPad, which I'm just in love with. I don't think there's a better thing around. And as a gadget, and it helps, you know, run the show with it and do all those things. But I couldn't get a recording to record, and so I went to Best Buy where I obtained it and purchased it. And you know, while many say don't buy the extended warranty, well, I've had a little understanding. It does cost a little more, and there are some tricks to it, and you know, and there's a sucker born every day, we know. So I buy it because things get broken or they malfunction because I really use them. And I take it in, and it's not recording, and I take it in, and the young man, the geek squad, they're not geekish. They're very sly, and they're very, very sharp at employing tactics that I'm going to describe to you and share with you. And if you've had a similar experience, please let me know, because ultimately I will be filing a complaint from a consumer standpoint, because this, I believe, the way I was treated in the process is fraudulent, and you'll understand as I lay it out. I take the laptop in, the iPad in, I tell them what the problem is. They say, okay. They look at it. He runs his fingers around the edges and says, oh, it's been, I see a little scratch here and a little scratch there. Okay, well, we'll give you a new one. But we have to look and process it, see what's wrong and check it out first. But if it's, you know, broken, we'll get. And it's still under warranty, by the way. The manufacturer's 1-year warranty. And keep that in mind. 1-year warranty is still valid, still good. But I also bought the extended warranty. You're going to like this, and it's news to me, but I've been told this is a practice that they do. So I thought a great opportunity to document it and be able to talk about it on the show firsthand. So I sit there, and the young man come back. Well, we've decided to give you a new one, but there's a problem. We have a white one here, but at the other store, we have a black one, and what we'll do... Now, you know, if we give you the new one, that will cancel your insurance on this. And then my question was, well, how is that so? Because if it's still under warranty, under the manufacturer's warranty, and I still have the extended warranty, you need to honor the manufacturer's warranty. Oh, no, we're going to take and cancel and void your insurance because that's what we're going to apply to this replacement. So, you know, quite naturally, I dibble just to get more because I'm thinking, good time to bring this out on the radio show. This is great because we rarely get to see firsthand. Usually it's someone calling us up and telling us about a practice that they felt was fraudulent. So I told him, no, I wouldn't agree with that, and that we had looked on the Apple website, and Apple on there described the problem that I had experienced with the audio part, and they were giving you new iPads if your audio was broken. And no questions asked, you go in, they look at it, they hand you a new one. And I told this young man that, and he still, that didn't faze him. So then I asked the manager. Manager came over, he didn't know the rules. But he asked another clerk. That clerk said, no, we wouldn't apply the insurance to that. We would honor the manufacturer's one. So the manager, named Kyle, wouldn't give him his last name, decided, well, he was going to go with the first guy. Well, now my thinking is I need to show that this is fraudulent, and I'm going to raise that issue. And how many people out there have experienced what I've experienced, if not an iPad, some other gadget at Best Buy? So I tell them, okay, we'll go down to the next store. But in the interim, I went down to Apple, gave them my iPad. They looked at it. They gave me a new one because they honored the existing 1-year manufacturer's warranty. It was still valid. So what I'm saying to you is that while I had purchased, I think it was $200, $300 for this extended warranty. So Best Buy knew that Apple would replace the iPad for me. They would in turn take my iPad that was not functioning properly and then be credited by Apple. And then they would automatically, Best Buy, having nothing to do with my extended warranty because it's the manufacturer's fault, decided to they would cancel the extended warranty. Now imagine if they did that 1,000 times or 500,000 times across the nation. So I say this to you, beware. That is a very slick game. And while you might be going into the Best Buy, you may not be getting the best deal. And I stand on that, and I hope they call up and try to challenge me because I was able to go in, as I had explained to the clerks and the manager, Apple will honor the year maintenance and the manufacturer's warranty. So why would you think that you can cancel my and apply my warranty, extended warranty, and pocket my money without ever spending a nickel? So I think I will be filing a formal letter with the Attorney General's office. And if you've had any of these experiences, please, I'd like to hear one or two or what have you, 524-1080. And that's just one trick that we know about and experience it firsthand, and I don't know. But if you also, the letters that I have from OHA backing on that subject with the Kupuna Ivi, we'll be posting some of these and up on the website at carol@carolcox.com, and we'll get that to you. If you'd like to, you can look at them. I would just like to know, what do some of you think about this whole process of what's going on out there? But anyway, I will be back. I got a little itchy throat here, and I'll let you listen to a little tune.
baby. Sooner or later, I know I'll get it right. Please don't give up on me. Oh, please don't give up on me. I know it's late.
Welcome back to the Carol Cox Show with the scratchy throat and all. But anyway, things are looking good. And I had a message here, a text message. Someone wanted to, they apparently had the letter and saw a portion of the OHA and asked, there was one question is in the letter. OHA reminds them, OHA trustees are united in the steadfast belief in and support for the strict application of HRS Chapter 6C to all situations, including cemeteries. We believe that the State of Hawaii Department of Health rules that currently permit mass removal and relocation of burial remains in conflict with these laws. Remains in conflict with these laws. This is kind of illegible here. Hawaiian cultural traditions and customs in the treatment of ancestral remains. Going forward, we are supporting pending legislation that we hope will address the jurisdictional conflict among the State Department of Health, Department of Commerce, and the Consumer Affairs, and the Department of Land and Natural Resources through the State Historic Preservation Division and its Burial Council. So apparently, as the person that sent me that text, apparently he was attempting to tell me it was about state law and traditional law and what have you, and someone was in OHA was addressing it. So I wasn't aware that there was a bill out there and about. But again, I did speak to someone out there at the palace. They've moved over to the church now, and one said they would be calling in. But there has been quite a bit of paperwork, and as I say, I'll try and get some of it up for you so you can see and make an informed opinion. And there's a lot going back and forth on this subject over there at Carlisle Church. And the application, someone wanted to know who was it that, how did they fill out the application and what have you, whose name did they put down? Well, they didn't put any name down. The application for disinterment permit was issued on October 14th, 2010. The full name of the deceased was unknown. The date of birth was unknown. And I offer this in response to the question that was asked. Whose name did they put? Maybe we can look at the names. No, they didn't list any of the family names. They just put unknown. Unknown. The age and time of death, unknown. Sex, unknown. Race, unknown. And everything was unknown. The name and location of cemetery where remains are now buried, Carlisle Church at Punchbowl. And that was it. And the question also was that what did the permit look like? Was it extensive? No, it was one paragraph to the church, and it states that the Department of Health is in receipt of your application for disinterment permit dated October 14th, 2010, and its attached letters dated June 11th, 2009. June 19th, 2009, and June 29th, 2009, and September 13th, 2010. This letter is to inform you that your application has been approved. This letter shall serve as your blanket disinterment permit and incorporates the terms of the application for disinterment permit. And by the way, if you ever need to do this or are interested in doing it, you go to the Vitals office there on Queen Street, on Punchbowl Street, at Baritania, the health department, and it is the health department that issues the disinterment. And again, there's in several phases that DLNR spoke about. Was phase one, there's a phase two, and that was, again, the parties that are doing the work, Cultural Surveys of Hawaii. And here's some of the conditions. I guess I just spell them out so that that the state had placed on these. Kauai shall consult with any known descendants in addition to church members and your Na'ivi committee for their input on relocation and reinterment. The church has been conducting consultations with respect to ongoing trenching and infrastructure work and will need to continue these efforts with other parties. And they spoke of an outreach. They are supposed to do an outreach. Ship the requests that you provide us with a complete list of everyone consulted as part of your weekly reports. And in their weekly reports that I got, I didn't get a copy or a name or anything where they say they spoke with anyone there or consulted with anyone as part of the condition. Carlisle agreed that excavation would occur in sections with a width of no greater than 10 feet. All excavation will be done by Cultural Surveys of Hawaii and will be done by hand. Now, SHPTI will be included in the pre-construction meeting. Now, there is a question there that many are raising. It's said that it would be done by hand, but some of the excavation was done by bucket excavator. So I don't know the details of that. And the DLNR gave approval to the plan for excavation and is prepared to issue a blanket disinterment permit to Carlisle Church. And this is the letter to the State Health Department. As each of our agencies is aware, there is a pending lawsuit against Carlisle Church and the state and the agencies relating to the disinterment. So I will try and get more information on this and see what happens with this this process is from someone standing afar looking and just trying to get some of the documents. And again, they're out there and there's many people working on it, And that is what is going on with this. I'm told there's a number sheriff and everybody. I don't know why the sheriff or whoever would be down there. I don't know what the deal is. And I will try and get you a copy of the grant letter that we're trying to get, the letter where they're demanding. And the question is, amongst many out there in the community, is why did OHA not follow through with the press conference to disclose this information that was out there? That is the bigger question that's looming. And I don't know. Is it something that are the people wrong for asking questions? Or are they right? Are they just being disruptive? I think when you know the amount of information that most of the people out there that are raising the issue have in their hands, you'd give some credit to their efforts and some validity to their concerns. And I know that when it comes to churches and all, people like to tip lightly and carefully and not offend anyone, and because those are sacred or hallowed grounds and great relationships. But even in church, things can go wrong, and they can easily be corrected too by talking and doing what's right and not being heavy-handed. And here's another email saying, well, you know, they didn't know about the $1 million and that was given to them. So a lot of things that people are not familiar with in this, you know, this whole process. So that's the way it goes out here. But anyway, next week I'm going to be talking, hopefully, on the Fukushima issue. And I'm jumping around here because there's one person said they'd be calling me right back. But in the Fukushima issue, I got a call and an email from a couple people, but one I spoke with said that they want to know what the nonprofits, or if there are nonprofits out here that are actually doing anything on the trash that's coming in. And I may be overreacting, but I share some of the thoughts with you out there ahead of time before this thing hits. Is there a portion of this trash contaminated with radiation? If so, who is going to be responsible for picking it up? And is the government doing any monitoring? Has the government found this pile of trash that's floating our way, this debris, and to determine and monitor it and test it for radiation? And imagine it coming and landing on shore here at Kahuku or up at Kahuku Point in those areas, and environmentalists or whomever goes out and start picking it up. Is there a risk of radiation or contaminants? So I think that we should not take this lightly. I think that what should happen is that the government should step in, the military. They have the testing equipment. They have the ability. And even then, it's going to require some strict monitoring. And I caution all of you that have been engaged in talking about this and going out. Now, again, I could be the guy who's the alarmist and having no reason to be alarmed. But you might want to consider those things. And if it comes ashore, and I'm not trying to frighten anyone, but these are things that I have not heard openly discussed. Has the civil defense, do they have a plan? Are they issuing a public notice to say, beware, stay away, stay safe, do all of these things? And it's going to require some serious, and again, this may be an overreaction, and maybe not a single piece of material was contaminated. And again, it might be just simply, I'm just paranoid and for no reason, but But the way things are unfolding, there are people saying and organizations saying that they are going to be doing something. And so here's the other question. Let's say that it is contaminated. Who picks it up? The National Guards? And who transports it? And where are they going to transport it to? Are they going to take it up to PVT? Are they going to take it to the Wymanala Gulch landfill? Or will they box it up and ship it out, depending on the volume? So can you imagine the trouble that this brings? And what I've been watching, it's as if rose petals were going to float in. I haven't seen the alarms. I haven't seen any coaching by civil defense or anything other than we have documented that it will be flowing here, but no assurances that. So that brings me to the next question. Did they really hide anything on Fukushima that we should be told? And there are all kinds of theories and rumors and claims that people are dying on the mainland, the milk is contaminated and what have you. I don't have any proof of it, but again, imagine you going out there on a church cleanup, wanting to just participate because your church and or the Boy Scouts and what have you are out there. It's already dangerous. But imagine being exposed to materials that were radiated from the Fukushima area. So I caution everyone to ask those questions and see what is really going on with this process. And it's a scary, scary thing. I can tell you, we don't know what we're playing with. And that is what is really going on. And another thing is, out on Pearl Harbor, and these are many things that I've been working on and trying to, I haven't gotten all the greater details. We're still working on the contamination. We will be filing complaints there at Hickam regarding that. And but one of the other things, we see a lot of damage due to the floods. And we see the city and the state people going when the flood causes it overflows. But over there at Pearl City off Lehua Street, there's a problem. The Wyava Stream runs down, meanders down back of Home Depot and through that area. And there is a auto scrap yard dealer. And you got to understand, this is something's wrong when you have the stream meandering and there's two bridges involved. The state say it's not their bridge. The city say it's not their bridge. The military say it's not theirs. The Corps of Engineers say they don't have any dealings. But the people on an annual basis experience flooding in their homes in some fashion, either a severe or a mild flooding. But it threatens this little community. All because not a single government agency will stand up and take responsibility. They are passing the buck. So I'm going to post some pictures on, and there is about a, what causes the overflow and the flooding, and it runs through now, through the junkyard. So all of the oil, all of the contaminants, all the chemicals and everything, the water washes and soaks and runs all of that oil and chemicals into the river because the river overflows its banks. And the reason is there is about a football field in length and about 30 feet, 35 feet, the width of the stream, the river itself, is choked with utility poles and trees. I don't mean limbs, trees, plastic, barrels, cans, bottles, plastic, you name it. And they get up on the bridge and they block it. And that then causes the backup upstream. And these communities are flooded, and believe it or not, just a general maintenance, just simple maintenance of pulling the trees off and the plants and all the debris from the bridge, allowing the flow to be consistent, you wouldn't have the overflow. And they did it. This is, again, speaking to the rechannelization. They actually took the stream and redirected its flow from its natural flow to place to accommodate a sewage treatment plant. And so each occasion, if you don't clean the trash out of the river, you're going to have big problems. It's very, very serious problems, in fact. And I will tell you, there's a gentleman named Mr. Young, and there's Capiche. I have pictures of them and others out putting their life in jeopardy, in danger, trying to clear the bridge. And believe you me, with the amount of water that come through there, if one of them fall in, I would say you can kiss it goodbye, because they're going to get embedded and trapped in that trash. But there's no effort. The Navy is standing by, and I guess it's going to take someone to die or what have you. Now, going back to that junkyard that's located in that area. Now, this junkyard, I filed complaints on them a couple of years back, and in the recent years they've had fires, and the State Health Department, Clean Water Branch, and all, supposedly have been working on closing him down and taking legal action for some while now. But they still allow him to operate, while they know he cannot qualify for a permit for an NPDS, a non-point elimination discharge system permit, which would address and prevent the contaminants and the oil and all of that from flowing into the river. They know that he can't qualify for a permit, but they continue to allow him to operate without a permit. That in itself is just mind-boggling, why they would allow that. It really is. It troubles me. And there is no effort to, one, address that. And then the third thing, there is a bike path that goes through there. Now, it's impassable at times. You see people walking away. And it's dangerous, because at some times, just this recent flood, there were an 8 feet high marker on the trees where you could see the watermark, and the velocity was enough to carry large automobile parts down to the river and dislodge them and move them. Imagine being on a bicycle coming through there unsuspectingly, and you'll be drowned. So this is on the bike path, people walking, the children, and then there's a foot of mud. Well, that mud, and there's gas escaping out of the ground, and there's oils and contaminants. So that's going to dry, and then the public is going to transit that area again, trying to exercise, and here is this mud that is loaded with contaminants, oils and chemicals and what have you, from the car dealership or the auto scrap yard. Why is the state allowing this to happen? It's absolutely puzzling, and I don't know if I also know that the city's yard was overflowing with water there in the maintenance yard there at Pearl City from this backup of water. So the solution is to prevent damage to homes and property and life. The city and the state needs to have a annual maintenance, and or contract it out or do something. So this goes back to that other issue. We spend all of our money in rail and that kind of stuff, but the simple things, the infrastructure and the daily activities go unnoticed, unattended to. And so that's why it presents a big problem. I mean, an absolutely horrendous problem with this whole process of managing with the city affairs. And Mr. Young was saying that he was 80, in his 80s. Now imagine an 80-year-old man having to go out and dig and scrap and try to dislodge utility poles. Now I don't mean little sticks, and try to dislodge them. I stood there day before yesterday watching and filming, trying to document it. And I saw two trees, the remnants of two trees floating down the river. And in about 5 minutes, they became jammed and lodged against the bridge. And you could see the water rise. So why is it that citizens have to expose themselves to this? And yet, I saw one city truck there, and they made an assessment. They had two children, the young people, with a rope tied around the waist, trying to dislodge, and realize that it was useless. Their efforts were useless, so they moved on and they left, and left the public exposed and to fend for themselves. There was a hazmat was called because there was smelling of gas, and I don't know about you, but I'm just trying to share with you the dangers that exist out there in that area based on just a simple tree limb clogging up the river. I stood there day before yesterday, and erupting out of the ground was gases. And when I mean erupting, I'm talking about forcefully coming out of the ground, pushing the water and bubbling as if it was boiling, and it was gas. So there are gas pipelines around there, and you wouldn't believe that this is an area now. The average guy on the bike path trying to be healthy transit that area every day. And unbeknownst to them, they're trekking in dust that is dry, that is soaked and saturated with chemicals and automobile fluids and other things, acetones and all of that. And something has to be done. So they really, the state health department really needs to shut it down and clean it up. And I mean, because it is dangerous. It's really a big problem. And I don't know what else we can do about that, but hopefully we see a little bit change coming. And I don't know what that means to us all, but anyway, that is about it for today with this. Wait, there's an email. Yeah, the person that sent me a message, a text. The documents that you ask about regarding Dana Hall, I don't have all the details on the actual lawsuit. I have where she wrote to Colette Machado. This is Dana Hall, Nona Hall. And she was questioning the grant. This is just, I'm going all over the place, but it's responding to a person that sent me an email asking this one. This letter is a follow-up to my oral testimony, and she was, because OHA distributes public ceded land trust funds for grants, it must do so in accordance with Section 42F-103, entitled Standards for the Award of Grants and Subsidies, which begin with the statement that grants to subsidies shall be awarded only to organizations that comply with all applicable federal and state laws prohibiting discrimination against any person. This is the standard language. She said in her letter, Kauai Howe Church has yet to demonstrate how the construction of the multipurpose facility in the manner proposed will support Hawaiian culture. The disturbance of ancestral burials remains, whether Christians or not, is to be avoided and has long been acknowledged to cause extreme grief and distress to Hawaiian families. One way to illustrate this basic conflict is to substitute the name of Hawaiian developer for the church. In that instance, would OHA have any doubt as to the culturally appropriate course of action? Kauai Howe Church should at least be held to the same standard as many other developers. And I guess, I don't know if they're sending me these questions from out there at the protest, but it's thank you anyway, and I'm hoping that it helps with some of these questions. But, yeah, there's lots of paperwork been generated. It's an approval of the October 19th resolution increased the church's capital campaign fundraising to $5 million. To $8 million. It should be noted that events ascribed occurred approximately 10 months before the filing of the lawsuits. And anyway, it's a lot of paperwork. And I was, hopefully one would have come in and talked, but apparently they are going to be busy out there. And coming up next is the Pieces of Rainbow. And Sonia Fabregas is I guess she has a guest with, I don't know what the subject matter is, but she'll be coming up and talking with you and sharing with you some of her things. So thank you, and today is a tired voice because of the sinus and what have you, but we'll be back fully charged next week, and thank you for tuning in.
I'm out here at Kauai Ha'olo Church this morning with a group of protesters, Hawaiian protesters, against Kauai Ha'olo Church for digging up Kupuna Ibi, 300 plus.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not stopping.
How many people in the protest group protesting? Kim?
Yes.
How many people in the group protesting?
We have over 50.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They did ho'okupu this morning at Iolani Palace.
Mm-hmm.
Then came over to do ho'okupu for our kupuna who has been dug up already. And they just took our ho'okupu up onto the sidewalk. Because they did not want it on their property, which is not their property. It's our property. It's the people from Hawaii.
So there is there any unrest, anybody, civil disobedience?
At this point, we're just letting people know. We're trying to get this out to the public as much as possible so that they understand that this is hallowed sacred ground and that this horrific actions have been taken by Kauai Ha'o Church and their leaders, Kahu Kekuna. And this is not a proper way to act. This is very sacrilegious.
Okay, well, I can hear it in the background. They're chanting. And I hope there's something good come of this, and thank you
for... Well, we need to get more information out to people in the public to let them understand that we're not standing here on the sidewalk just because we want to make noise. This is sacrilegious. This is an act that is horrific. And that people need to stand for what is right. We don't want our families dug up. It's bad enough. Everybody's homeless as it is. Now they're not even our dead is homeless.
Okay. Well, you keep me posted. We got about 30 seconds here, so.
All right, Carol. Thank you.
Thank you, and I hope you
like it. Aloha.
Aloha. Bye bye.
Thank you for tuning in to the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sunday mornings from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. right here on